three tomatoes are walking down the street. Papa tomato, mama tomato, and baby tomato. Baby tomato starts lagging behind, and Papa tomato gets really angry. Goes back and squishes him. Says, ketchup.
Hey, y'all, just a quick word about the Burnt Orange Bible. That's right. It's the 10th annual Thinking Texas Football College Football Preview. It is the preeminent Texas Longhorn football preview, as well as the Big 12 and all Texas opponents. It's chock full of great information. It's 150 pages of burnt orange goodness. If you haven't bought it yet, shame on you. How dare you be a listener to this podcast and not read the greatest preview ever written about Texas football. You could buy it at Amazon for the paperback. You can also buy it for e-versions on Apple and Smashwords. Smashwords is an independent publisher, and that's where you should go buy it if you have a Kindle. Folks, jump in. You're going to enjoy it. And if you're not sure about it, you got your water, your toe tipped in the water, I should say, you're not sure you want to dive in, go to Amazon right now, read the reviews. As of this recording, there's 61, all 5 stars. Give them a read. Give that preview a read. Let's get ready for the season.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.
All right, welcome back. I'm joined by popular demand, Ian Boyd, comedian extraordinaire. Ian, are you going to tell another joke on this podcast? I had to issue you a month-long suspension for your last joke attempt, and you've now gotten out of the probationary period.
Great. I've got one, but it has to be set up properly for me to get it in there, so I just got to wait and see if opportunity knocks or not.
All right. Well, do you want to hear a joke that got me and my son in trouble?
Yes.
So he told a joke at school, which was inappropriate. Mm. And they asked him, where did you get the joke? And he said, it's a dad joke. Mm. Meaning I got the blame because I'm his dad, right?
Yeah.
So what he meant was literally, it's a dad joke. Like it comes from the genre of dad jokes. Because yeah, he had gone to, I can't say it because it's sitting right next to me. He went to the computer program that lives in your house that you can talk to that plays music and reminds you of things, Alexa. Because if I say it out loud, it'll burst into life over here next to me. So he asked that tool, tell me a dad joke. So Alexa told him the joke. And it...
What do you call a hen that counts eggs? That, A mouth
and
a chicken.
Alexa, tell dad joke.
No, she just did. I think I mentioned before that I once had a customer service rep named that name, and I was talking to her trying to get something straightened out in my Amazon account, and then that program kept activating, and it was just hijinks, Ian. Anyway, Jake asked a joke, and the joke was, how do you get a squirrel down from a tree?
I don't know.
Pull down your pants and show them your nuts. And that was the joke he told in school. And then he was obsessed by that because when he told me that joke, I'd died laughing. And then I told him, you've heard the like thing of D's nuts, right?
Yeah, I'm familiar.
So that was the answer to all of his questions for the rest of the day. I'd just tell him D's nuts, which he thought was the most hilarious thing in the world. Which he later said in the later in the day in an inappropriate time. So anyway, I had a talking to about what jokes are appropriate at school, but I got the blame because literally he'd asked for a genre of dad jokes, but I got blamed as the dad they thought I told him the joke, but it was this Chinese malware that lives in my house that eavesdrops on me and sends all my info to the national security agencies.
My kids got me in trouble with the wife recently, the littler ones. She was out of town, and I had the two youngers for the weekend, and I was on a little bit of a Metallica kick because of the Stranger Things deal. And so I was, yeah, playing some Metallica for the little ones. And this has happened a couple times where I'll teach the kids a song. And then when we're in the minivan all together, the kids will be like, can we hear a song? Mom, play us a song, like on, you know, YouTube on her phone or something. She'll be like, okay. And then they'll be like, you know, my son will, for like a year demanded that we listen to Sandstorm on every minivan ride.
That's awesome.
My wife is like, I hate you. So we were in there and Nora, or my little daughter's like, I want Master song. And then the little baby's like, yeah, Master.
That's awesome.
My wife is like, what? What are you talking about? And I was like, that's Master of Puppets by Metallica. And then, what? Yeah.
You're only supposed to play folk music for them, Ian.
Yeah, she doesn't really want 8-minute thrash metal ballads in the car when we're going to school or something. But
yeah, my son, have you ever heard of the Swedish death metal band Sabaton?
I have not.
So Sabaton is a Swedish death metal band that only does songs about war and great battles of history. Hmm. And so, I bought my son's into history. And so I bought him a book of great battles for boys or something like that. And it's a breakdown of some of the iconic battles of history and talks about who the opponents were and what the strategy was. And he loves it.
You should link me that. I'm gonna get my kid dad in maybe a couple of years.
Yeah, there you go. So he finds out from a friend about Sabaton that there's a death metal band that sings only about wars and battles. And so he constantly asks for Sabaton music, and it makes Metallica look soft. And his current favorite is about the winter war during World War II between the Finns and the Soviets. And it's a song about their sniper, whose name I forget, who killed like 800 Soviet troops. Very famous Finnish sniper. So that's my son Jake's current hero. And he asked me if I could get a poster of him. And I said, I don't think they have a poster of a circa 1940 Finnish sniper.
You can just frame that tweet that, did you see that tweet Finland had? Where it was like, you know, they have those boxes that you have to click, like click where the lights are to prove you're not a robot. Click the boxes that have a traffic light in them.
Right.
Finland put one of those up on Twitter to Russia that was like, click on the box where there's a Finnish sniper hiding.
Oh, that's great.
Like a snowy landscape.
It's just white.
Every single box is clicked.
That's awesome. Oh, man. All right. Well, we've talked about kids and inappropriate material. We've talked about geopolitics. Before we do that, we talked about music that rocks. I want to talk to you about a mortgage guy that rocks, and his name is Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Hey, here's the bottom line on Gabe. He's a great guy. He's a former Longhorn. He is the most overqualified mortgage guy he'll ever deal with. He has a law degree. He was a really high performing student at Texas. He left law practice to do something that he wanted to do, something a little more entrepreneurial. And frankly, he likes helping people. And as a mortgage guy, he's able to help people realize their dreams. That sounds a little sappy, but I think he actually digs that part. And I think he loves the math and the markets and trying to find you the best deal possible, shopping around, because as a freelance mortgage broker, he's able to access up to 85 different pricing models and 85 different lenders. Most mortgage guys you talk to have one lender, one rate, and they are set and dried there. Gabe is very creative. He can find solutions for you, whether it's a jumbo loan, whether you're a VA, whether you're a conventional, whatever. Give him a call. You can reach him at 832-557-1095 or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. All right, Ian, a lot of Texas fans can't be blamed for feeling like our house, the burnt orange house, is caving in a little bit. Texas had a scrimmage and they lost Junior Angelau, starting guard or possibly center for the season. They lost Isaiah Nayor, of course, the
highly touted transfer from Wyoming. He was going to be the deep threat paired with Xavier Worthy, the 1-2 combination Texas fans were looking forward to. It's why you and I both had said we think Texas has by far the best wide receiver core in the Big 12, probably one of the best 10 in the nation. And then they had some minor injuries to Cole Hudson, who looks like he's going to be pushing for a starter's position at guard. And then Jahdae Barron, who also got hurt. Apparently he turned his ankle stepping on an official. I mean, that's about as snake bit as you can get in a scrimmage. So I wrote an article specifically dealing with the Isaiah Nayor problem and how to replace him and what Sark is going to do. And then you had a follow-up article, which I thought was very good, talking about both Ongalau and Nayor. I think Nayor is the bigger loss of the two, but both are certainly a loss. Can we talk a little bit about that and talk about also the article you wrote and talking about how we're going to try to transition and make some adjustments? Don't throw away the season just yet would be what Ian and I would offer. What do you think, Ian? How do you want to dive into this?
Yeah, no, it's actually kind of funny. I must have written that article around the same time you wrote yours. And I was I was holding it to post maybe after Sark's press conference in case he announced a quarterback. And I needed to, you know, you want your first column after that to reflect that. And then yours went up and I was like, oh, I need to rewrite this anyway because me and Paul are going to say too many of the same things. So we're definitely on the same page, I think, with the impact here. I'd even add from the scrimmage that, you know, a lot of us were thinking like, if the scrimmage goes a certain way, he may name a starter. And the fact that it didn't and he didn't suggests that I just no sugarcoating that, right? It seems like Sark wanted Quinn Ewers to win the job and he's not winning the job. And so I think that adds to just the general feeling around Texas of just like, oh no, everything is coming undone. Lost the deep threat, lost the big interior lineman. The more talented quarterback is not seizing the job. But yeah, for all that, definitely the season's not over. There's a lot of adjustments. It's probably good that it happened when it did because they have time to adjust.
You'd mentioned in your article that Nayor was going to be integral in what you termed the four corners offense.
Because the earth is flat and there are four corners to it.
The earth is flat. I'm glad you acknowledge that publicly. There's far too people who don't have enough courage to talk about that. You know that there's a giant ice wall at the end of the flat earth, right?
That's what I hear.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you know any airline pilots, they'll affirm this. But you talked about the four corners. Have you heard four corners offense used before? Do you know where that comes from? The prior use?
I don't think so.
So basketball.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a famous tactic utilized by the North Carolina Tar Heels, were the guys who invented it. And it was a freeze-out offense that when you have a lead, if you go up by six, North Carolina would just put in the four corners offense because this is pre-shot clock. And they would literally spread out the court and just dribble back and forth and pass to each other. And they would have possessions that last 5, 6, 7 minutes, just basically burning clock. And you would end up with final scores of like 31-27. And the NCAA decided this was not good basketball. So they put an end to that practice, put in a shot clock, which actually was much to the chagrin of basketball purists at that time. So I think they made a good decision and made a better product. I don't think you're suggesting that that was the Texas offense. I think you're suggesting a different kind of four corners offense. So talk us through what that looks like.
Yeah. In retrospect, maybe I needed to workshop that nickname, but it's probably not relevant anyway now. But the idea was, you know, pro style Bryles is what I called Sark's offense when he first came, and adding Nayor and putting Ongalau at center was definitely a Brylesian kind of move. It's basically, we're going to have huge bodies inside, overpower you in the run game. But then our receivers are going to be split extra wide and we're going to have deep threats to each corner of the field. And so we're going to make things easy on the cornerback and we're going to pick you apart with the spacing because you can't be in everywhere at once. And if you shade to Worthy and Nayor, then Bijan's going to run wild. if you pack the box for Bijan, there's no way you can keep people over the top against Nayor and Worthy. And I think that that vision of the offense is probably functionally dead now. It's possible that they can put good deep threats on either side of the field, but it's just very unlikely, I would say. Like Nayor, you knew that Nayor could do that, and obviously Worthy can do it. And they have a lot of, they have a couple guys maybe that could be Nayor, but they need to get there first, and they're at best probably a year away, like a Troy Emery or a Kesey Kane. And it's also very possible that neither of them will ever be what Nayor was.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to summarize sort of pithily what the difference now in the offense might be with these injuries, particularly Nayor, is that Texas wanted to have a deep vertical threat offense that, because of that threat, had a lot available, would have a lot available horizontally. And I think Texas may have to shift to a more of a horizontal offense that sets up its shots vertically, as it did last year.
Yeah.
So I guess let me talk about personnel. Can we replace Isaiah Nayor one for one at X?
No.
Why not?
Because it's very difficult to I was just going to say they can probably take a lot of shots this year from the slot. They can probably take a lot of vertical shots from the slot. Those are a little easier to account for as a defense because their safeties tend to be in the middle of the field. But Texas has a lot of guys that are good at that. What's very hard is having a guy that can consistently win deep against a corner one-on-one, especially if he's on the line at X receiver and the corner can press him. So Nayor could do that. I mean, this is what killed Texas in 2020, is that they didn't have anyone that could do that. Everyone had to be schemed open from the slot. Anybody that they put outside would get shut down. And it takes a lot of developed skill and not just being big or fast to do it.
To that end, you see a lot of people on the boards, a lot of fans saying, hey, Brennan Thompson's fast. Just play him at X.
Right. But he's, what did you say in yours? He's like 160 pounds. Has not dealt with a lot of skilled press corners. I don't know. Maybe he would be good at it. But, I mean, you're just throwing darts at the board right now. If you're trying to come up with another guy that can do that. It's like, sure. It's like an offseason when it was like, well, who could be a pass rusher? Maybe Finkley will be amazing as a freshman once we lost Mathis, right? Maybe Finkley can do it as a freshman. Maybe Jamon Tapp will come in and immediately be all Big 12. Maybe Ogofu will figure it out. Maybe they'll spin down Overshow. Well, maybe they will. Maybe it will work out. But it's like the more names you start having to list to arrive at a plausible, the more likely it is that you just don't have it.
Yeah. Hey, we talk about the idea that they seem to be basing, and I mean basing is literally, that's just the start of the offense out of 12. There's a lot of reasons Texas wants to do that. There's a lot of reasons Sark wants to do that. And it has to do with the offensive line. It has to do with making reads easier. But I also think part of the pretext for 12 personnel, and just to clarify to everyone, that's two tight ends, one running back, two wide receivers. One of the things that allows you to base out of 12 and still be a threat to the defense vertically is having Nayor and Worthy as the two receivers.
Yeah.
Now that we're minus Nayor, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, well, 12 is more likely, you know, we're going to spend more time in 12 now because Nayor's out, because we have to replace him with, you know, a tight end effectively. Right. I'm wondering if it's more likely Texas spends time in 11 now, because part of the value of Nayor and Worthy in 12 is you only have two receivers on the field, but their presence spreads the field, right?
Yeah.
I'm wondering Because look, we agree there's not a one-for-one replacement for Nayor, right? There's not another guy we can plug in who's going to provide what he provided. So I'm wondering if you have to recreate his threat in the aggregate, right? Meaning if you go to 11, now you can't really gang up on Worthy quite as easily, especially because Sark is very gifted at moving guys around and figuring out the defense, figuring out the coverage, figuring out the rules of the coverage, moving guys around and still getting them the ball. I'm wondering if you, and also Whittington for that matter, operates best. He's going to be more effective the more space on the field, right? As a slot, particularly since he's good after the catch. I'm wondering if you don't try to create Nayor one for one, you run out Tariq Milton, and then you have kind of, Whittington's not small, but you have three smaller type receivers just running a lot of different kinds of creative routes, looking for space, horizontally as much as vertically. And then that's the new Texas offense. It's recognition before the snap, getting the ball out, and then trying to run the ball against an honest box. What do you think?
Yeah, in RPOs, right? Like, they have a number of guys now. Nayor, take a play action shot, get in 12 personnel, make sure your quarterback has time, and then just run two guys deep or cross the field with them like on that big Ewers bomb in the spring game. And they can get open even though there's only two of them. But the guys they have now would be effective in RPO concepts.
Yeah.
Where it's what you're talking about with horizontal stress, where you have like a slot, you have a two-man route combination, and then, your run in the box and maybe Worthy isolated on the other side. They have lots of guys that could probably be good at getting underneath on a slant or catching a quick out and making you pay. Whittington had a great play on a bubble screen in the spring game, I noticed, where the safety's flying down and the safety gets there like almost after, as the ball does. But Whittington made a quick move and then, 10 yards. So, yeah, just you end up wanting to have more true route combinations with guys crossing paths and manipulating space underneath if you don't have the guys that are just going to run by people. And 12, I'm sure they'll run 12.
Of course.
Jaleel Billingsley could be, maybe they could put him online even, flexed out, or there's different things they could do. But yeah, you end up, because I think another part of the rationale for fans is like, oh, we're going to see more 12 now because we have fewer good receivers, right? So just play two of them instead of playing three. But they have, all these guys that will thrive in the slot, but you have to create a slot for that to happen.
Yeah, so I mentioned Tariq Milton. He strikes me as sort of next man up along with Casey Kane. I think this also creates more opportunity for Jatavion Sanders. It seems like you're gonna have to rejigger this offense a little bit into more of a execution possession-based passing game. And to me, Sanders is that guy that you're trying to hit between 10 and 15 yards when Worthy, creates some space. And obviously you have the play action threat. You have the run threat of Bijan, Roshan when he gets healthy, Keelan Robinson, not exactly a slouch either. So I think that all still exists.
It's like the old Greg Davis offense, right?
Yeah. Well,
trips left and trips right. You got a flanker and a slot off the ball and then only one receiver on the line. If the tight end can play on the line.
Yeah. Let's hope it's the 2008 version.
Yeah.
Rather than 2010. Right.
I mean, maybe 2007 is a pretty good,
Yeah. The problem is the more receivers you put on the field and the more you have going on, the more you're relying on the quarterback to make a bunch of decisions. Right. And so that gets into, there's a reciprocal feedback loop here is what we're trying to say. Yeah. And that kind of brings us to Junior Ongalau. So I had speculated that, look, maybe they're just trying to get depth with Junior Ongalau. Like, he's come in and taken snaps at center before because he's the number two center. But it's also pretty clear that Flood wants size on the interior. He wants maybe to create that interior pocket where you can do quick RPOs and you're not going to get penetration. You know, everyone agrees that interior pressure from a defense is the worst kind of pressure, because there's just not much. If your outside guys do their job, there's just not much for the quarterback to do other than get rid of the ball or get sacked. And so they want to obviate that by putting more size in a guy who's not going to get pushed back in Junior Ongalau. And then they wanted to obviously bring in and put Hayden Connor at one guard spot. He's not a guy who's going to get pushed. And then you lessen the guard splits and you just create a wall. And you tell those three guys, hey, don't travel to help. I don't care if they're twisting and stunting. We're not allowing penetration up the middle. If there's going to be pressure, it's going to come late and it's going to come off the edge. And that's on the quarterback. If he gets hit, I'm going to yell at him, not at you guys.
Or inside of Christian Jones.
Exactly. Going across his face. My hope is, and my guess, Ian, is that that would also be addressed, right? Which is, you tell the tackles, you know, if a guy gets around you, we can live with that. If a guy comes across your face inside of you, I'm just going to bench you. Like, we're not going to have a discussion about it. Like, I'm just going to put you on the bench. I'm going to put another guy in. So some of that may have been thwarted a little bit by Junior Ongalau's injury. I'm not sure. We're going to have to see. The other interesting wrinkle is it looked like they're trying to create space to start true freshman Cole Hudson, which is, you know, what we saw in the spring game. You know, I remember I was watching the spring game and thinking, wow, Cole Hudson's playing really well for a freshman. And then as the game progressed, I was thinking, Cole Hudson's just playing really well. Like, I don't need the freshman disclaimer. And obviously the coaches have seen that as well. They were trying to create space to start the guy, not DJ Campbell, right? And that obviously throws a little bit of a wrench. You lose some depth. Obviously, you don't want to lose a starter who started 34 games. But is losing Ongalau the end of the world? You know, as some are saying, oh, we're losing our most experienced offensive lineman. We're doomed. Or is it potentially, is there an opportunity to get better at that position over the long term, given that Ongalau seems to have hit his ceiling maybe some time ago?
So I think there's two paths from here on that. One path is actually to, you know, play majors, just accept it. And they could go the other way and play wider splits, kind of like the air raid. And then it's like, you know, if a guy gets inside pressure, he's a little further and the quarterback has a little more room to navigate, and then some, you know, passing lanes created by the splits. I don't know the extent to which they would try that, but I did notice that in 2014, Sark did the exact same script. He moved his best, biggest guard inside to center. He played true freshman at both guard positions. And then he used wider splits, I think maybe in part, maybe to help in pass protection, but definitely to run. He simplified his outside zone game to make it mostly pin and pull. So instead of asking his freshmen to coordinate combo blocks, you're either pinning or you're pulling, you know? So you don't have to work in concert so much, and you can use your athleticism. So they could sort of go that route, or they could go, I don't know that the mega-sized line is dead, because from what we've heard, Hayden Connor actually knows the playbook well enough to make the calls from guard if they wanted him to. So it's possible that they could still do something like, it hurts that Cole Hudson got hurt, but it doesn't sound like he's out too long. They could try to move Hudson to center, rush Campbell along, and then go something like Banks, Connor, Hudson, Campbell, Jones. Or, I've always wondered what Carrick would look like at center. Seems like he's tough. He's athletic. He's probably somewhere in between majors and Ongalau in terms of being pushed backwards into the quarterback. He's not going to be Ongalau in that regard, but he may not be majors either. It's a little bigger. who knows how he snaps the ball or if they feel like they can afford to move him from tackle.
But so that's kind of the rub though, Ian, because people are sort of trying to create their mix and match offensive line, just pretending the center snap is a given, right? Yeah,
right.
And it's kind of a skill. I even in high school, I remember they made me rep at backup center, just like as an emergency thing. And I hated it in no small part because one of our backup quarterbacks would not take the snap properly. And half the time when I'd hike the ball, when he was under center, it would hit me in my nuts, which was not good. Quarterback, you got to actually get in there.
At least they use the shotgun nowadays, so you're just tossing it.
Well, but that's actually harder.
Is it?
Yeah. Doing an accurate center snap, you're not going to hit your nuts. That's good. You have to deliver it pretty quickly, and it needs to be, obviously, you need it to be in the numbers of the quarterback. You know, a high snap or a low snap, you know, that's a turnover waiting to happen. That's, you know, a potential sack. You know, if it's an RPO, you've completely ruined the play just off of, you know, the quarterback having to fumble with it, right? And he can't get his eyes up to make the read. So we're kind of taking that as a foregone conclusion. You see people saying, oh, just make DJ Campbell the center. And it's like, well, it doesn't really work that way. You know, there is a skill to being able to snap the ball, also see what's going on, call out the Mike linebacker, and then make your proper block and take your steps as you snap it, right? And so that requires a lot of work and effort.
Potentially, they could just put the whole call the offense duty on the guard. Campbell, it sounds like the word with Campbell right now is he's struggling to pick up the playbook, essentially.
Yeah, and you can't play that guy at center.
Yeah. You can't add also snap the ball to his job requirements.
Things don't get better when you add another thing.
Yeah. Sounds like it would be – I think Hudson has already taken snaps at center. So it sounds like it'll be Majors or Hudson at center with Logan Parr as your emergency guy.
Yeah.
I would also wonder, like, well, could Connor do it? If he knows how to call the line, could he also snap the ball? But he hasn't, so.
So unless you see a huge upsurge from a DJ Campbell or, say, Christian Jones fails at tackle and you want to move him to guard, or you say you want to move Karich to guard or something, whatever. The point is, it's now Jake Majors' center job. Like, I think – I understand what Flood may want to do, but, you know, events occurred and events have the final word on what you want to do often. So I think until someone has this amazing growth during the course of the season, Jake Majors is our center. Like, I think that's what's happening. So I'd be surprised if it's not the case, you know, come opening day.
I would say there might be an outside shot that it's Hudson, especially if they get to a point where they really want Campbell to play.
Yeah.
Although they could also, you know, they could bump Connor out to right tackle and find room for Campbell that way. But otherwise, it would need to be at guard. So still. An uncomfortably large number of ways the offensive line could shake out.
Yeah, you know, and I will say I think there is something to the idea of, obviously, you want constancy in your offensive line, you know, but I think a lot of fans would be surprised if you look at other teams. How many other teams shuffle their offensive line throughout the season?
Yeah.
And they're moving a tackle down to guard, or they're moving a guard out to tackle, and, you know, they have to shuffle and they have to move this guy to here. You know, if you follow Iowa State, Oklahoma State, whoever, that stuff's happening all the time. And we're just kind of unaware of it. We think everyone's got their starting five and they've all been starters for 3 years. Most college offensive lines are getting reconfigured throughout the course of the year.
No doubt. Even Flood landed on Landon Dickerson like 5 games into the season at center in 2019. So Yep. Par for the course, for sure.
Absolutely. So Roschon Johnson sounds like his injury isn't certainly season ending, or he's not going to miss a significant part of the season. Anytime you turn an ankle, though, that can be tricky.
An ankle, too.
Oh, is that what it is? I thought, what is the injury?
I think it might be a high ankle, but I'm not actually sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he hurt his, it's definitely his ankle got hurt.
Oh, okay.
If the timeline is a month, that would make you think high ankle, right?
Yeah. Those things aren't, those things are not always reliable.
Ankles?
Yeah. And, you know, look, obviously he's going to fight to come back. He's going to rush to come back if he can. If he's not going to be able to play against Bama, say, at 100%, you just hold him out altogether until conference play.
That game looks worse every day.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good.
Hey, he was looking up, and then the scrimmage happened, and now it looks like just a disaster.
Well, they're
having a bad camp, too, in Alabama. Like, every single receiver is hurt, and I don't even know what's going on with their offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, with Bama, I'm conceding a certain amount of scoring just because of the talent at quarterback and talent at running back, and they'll scrap something together at wide receiver with their transfers and all the other guys. But it was the defense. You know, the concern was, hey, could we put enough board points on the board to be competitive and hang in there? And with Nayor and with Worthy, I was kind of optimistic. I mean, yeah. You go watch Ole Miss, you go watch some of those games, and you can see the chinks in the armor, even though Bama's defense is real good. You take away Nayor and you look at the approach that Texas will probably have in that game, and it's something that I think Saban can throttle, right? I think he knows how to try to defend that. Sark's got some tricks up his sleeve, I'm sure. But I don't want to focus on that game, to be honest. I think they're the best team in the country. And Texas is not. So at a certain level, although I'm excited about the game, I'm amped about it, it's going to be a great atmosphere, all that, it doesn't mean much. It just doesn't. I mean, what means something is Texas going and playing in the Big 12 title game. That's what's meaningful to me.
It's just, it's this tricky roadblock because, like, different choices, really, it's really a quarterback. Because you want to like, just either path you go at quarterback, you have this looming, potentially psyche crushing game on the schedule, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what if we put Ewers out and we're just like, let's just see what happens. And then what happens is he just gets throttled by that pass rush and that shifting secondary. And then what does that do to him? And then, like, similarly, like, let's say Sark is like, I'm going to trust Card. Card is the more veteran guy that I have. He puts Card out there. Card gets destroyed. All the fans are clamoring every week for Ewers. And they're like, look, you see, he melted down again. He can't handle it, you know? And then maybe it doesn't matter too much on the team. I definitely know it's going to matter for those of us that are on message boards and have to wade through the humanity in the comments.
Well, look, to a certain extent, you know, people could be outraged hearing this, but Sark needs to ignore all that noise and all the politics and the perception and look at the process of the game. And if he grades out the game fairly and he says, hey, Hudson didn't have a chance on this play, or Ewers didn't have a chance on this play, then that's what happened. I don't care if he threw a pick six, right? Well, he threw a pick six because someone gave up a free run up the middle. The ball got deflected and it hung in the air. And the average fan goes, oh, freaking choking quarterback. I mean, it's a meaningless emotional sort of analysis. And Sark needs to stick by his guns and just look at the actual game, actual process, and grade it out. Grade out the film. Grade out the quarterback. And if your quarterback played okay, even if Texas gets, you know, beat or even beat bad, then so be it. You roll them out the next week and you try to get better. You know, I think he needs to ignore the politics and do the things that are best for the program. and best for the Big 12. You don't want to overreact to playing the best team in the country early in the season, no less. I mean, the hope is that Texas, which is young on the offensive line, which is going to be not super experienced at quarterback, the hope is that they're going to get better as the season progresses. Same for the defense. So, yeah, I don't want people to overreact whatever the result of the Bama game. Even if Texas pulls off an upset, I mean, it's just a football game. And stuff happens. Doesn't mean that, oh, we're going to go undefeated. You know, oh, I mean, it's just not how football works when you're not a super talented team. You can rise up one week and then you can struggle with UTSA the next week.
I remember in 2017, they were, you know, a fumble or inches or a decent 2-minute defense away from beating a still good USC team with Sam Darnold in week two or week three.
Yeah.
And then even if they'd won that game, that team was still, you know, were they 7-6 that year?
Yeah, they had a great defense and just no offense.
Yeah, that was just baked in. That was what was going to happen.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call.